Welcome to the Retirement Risk Show, the best retirement interviews and advice with Dave Hall. Learn strategies to help you reduce and even eliminate the risks facing your retirement.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Dave Hall. I am your host. Here we are again, talking about that longest self-imposed period of unemployment most of you'll have in your lifetime. It could last 10 years. It could last 20. Heck, it might even last 30 or 40. It is what we call retirement. If you would like to learn more about what you can do to get safely through retirement, go to my website, retirementriskadvisors.com. Here you'll be able to get access to all my education tools. My new book is finally done. That's going to be coming out here soon. You'll be able to get access to that. We've also got an exciting new live event where we're going to be doing 6 hours of continuing education for you CPAs. Also, those who are not CPAs, feel free to attend, be deep diving into the various risks that we talk about to get you through your retirement years. Today, we're going to be talking about Social Security again. We've been focusing on this now for about a month or so because it's such an important topic. What we find is there's so many people that don't make the right decision as it relates to this Social Security benefits and how they're going to impact you. I brought another expert in with me today. Her name is Mary Beth Franklin. She is a known and respected Social Security expert and CFP. She has spent decades as a financial journalist covering similar topics most of her career. She has authored a book on Social Security called Maximizing Social Security Benefits. While she is phasing herself into retirement, she still mentors journalist students while writing articles on the latest retirement news herself. She can provide insight into Social Security strategies and the program. Mary Beth, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Happy to be here.
So this is unique for me. I've never talked to a journalist that really focuses on Social Security. I talk to experts all over the country that usually advise individuals on Social Security. But let's talk a little bit about how you got into journalism first.
Well, as you mentioned, I have been a journalist for over 40 years. Way back in the 80s, I was a Capitol Hill reporter for United Press International. You didn't know they hired 12-year-olds back then, did you? I got my start covering basically all the big tax legislations, federal budget, and Social Security reform back in 1983. So I actually watched how the sausage was being made the last time Social Security faced a funding crisis. And many of the ideas they had back then of how to shore up the finances of the program would probably apply in the future. The thing to keep in mind is, why are we facing a financial crisis, a shortfall in the next 10 years with Social Security? Two things: demographics, and believe it or not, the inequality of wages. Because way back in 1983, the Bipartisan Commission on Social Security, which was headed by a guy who at the time nobody had ever heard of, and his name was Alan Greenspan. He went on to become the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. Greenspan said that as long as 90% of U.S. wages were covered for FICA payroll tax purposes, Social Security would never run out of money. The problem is only about 83% of U.S. wages are now covered because we, employers and employees, pay 6.2% of their gross wages up to a certain taxable wage base each year. This year, it's $160,200. So many people make so much more than that, that are not paying FICA taxes that support Social Security, that covered wages has dropped to about 83%. So that's one of the problems, that not enough tax revenue is coming in. And then we have this enormous baby boomer generation that has been retiring since about 2010. And we're really hitting the point where in the next 10 years, virtually all boomers will be retired and collecting their Social Security benefits. And the smaller generations behind them, mainly Gen Xers, who are paying into the system, there's this slippage in the number of workers that are supporting Social Security. Way back when the program was founded in about 1935, there were about 33 workers per retiree because it was a brand new program that was pay as you go. It slipped to about 10 to 1 as the decades went on, 3 to 1, and now it's slipping towards 2 to 1. So something has to be done beyond the general benefits cut, tax increases, to inject some money into the system. And I think we're getting to the point that in the next 10 years or so, there's going to have to be some sort of transfer of general tax revenue in the short term at least, to make sure all Social Security benefits continue to be paid. But as a former political reporter and as a senior citizen myself right now, I really don't think Congress wants to tick off more than 65 million voters by saying, hey, we're going to cut your benefits. I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm on the same page with you. I believe there's going to be a fix. In fact, one of the comments I often use when I talk about Social Security is it's going broke, but it will never go broke. It's not going to completely run out of money. What are some thoughts you have on this as a reporter and an expert in this topic?
I agree with you completely. The way the Social Security Act was written is that Social Security can only pay benefits from the revenues it has collected, those FICA taxes. Well, over the last 30 to 40 years since the last major Social Security reform, the government was collecting more FICA tax revenues than it needed, and it deposited that in what we now think of as the trust funds. And for years, those trust funds grew untouched to about $3 trillion. Around 2010, when the first of the boomers started retiring and we were recovering from the last major financial crisis in 2008, 2009, you had more people pulling benefits out of the system and fewer paying into the system. So 2010 was the first time that ongoing FICA tax revenues alone were not sufficient to pay benefits. So at that point, we also started tapping the interest on the trust funds. That was fine for about 10 years. 2021, now that alone was not enough. So we actually had to start tapping the principal of the trust funds. And we are now drawing down those trust funds. And if Congress did nothing between now and roughly 2033, that depletion date changes from year to year. If Congress did nothing, there would still be enough ongoing FICA tax revenues to pay about 80% of promised benefits. But frankly, nobody is going to be satisfied with 80% of benefits. If history is any guide, Congress very seldom cuts benefits of existing beneficiaries or near retirees for that matter. The question is, would they look backwards? Yeah, there could be benefit changes, tax changes going forward, but in the past, Congress has given the American public decades to get used to those changes as opposed to months or years. That, in my opinion, is good public policy. We'll just have to see because Congress is so divided. And from the politician's standpoint, they have no good news to tell you. They're going to say, hey, we're going to cut your benefits or raise your taxes. Vote for me. They don't want to say that, so they say nothing. They just keep kicking the can down the road. Now, when President Biden is in his State of the Union address earlier this year, basically cornered the House Republicans into agreeing that they would not touch Social Security and Medicare during the pending debt ceiling debate, I think that was right. That's a separate issue that should not be held hostage to the debt ceiling. But beyond that, we have to grapple with the fact that this critical retirement income program is facing a financial shortfall unless Congress does something. They have to do something. Now, from the retirees' point of view, I hear so many people that say Social Security is going broke. We already decided that's not happening. I'm going to grab my benefits as soon as possible so I can get my share. Well, if you say your full retirement age is 67 and you claim 5 years early at 62, you're going to take a 30% benefit cut for the rest of your life. Now, if your worst fear happens and benefits are cut 10 years from now, you're going to take a 20% cut on top of the 30% cut you already took. How smart is that? So I tell people that to claim benefits early out of fear is like selling your stocks in a down market. The only thing you have guaranteed is you have locked in a loss.
Yeah, you don't know this, but we always talk about the concern that people have of fear of missing out, and really it should be fear of running out. That's what we need to be more focused on, is saying longevity is having us live longer. We're in situations where we've got more retirees in their 80s and 90s that don't have the income that they need. You may not know this as well. I've had the opportunity on this show to interview Andrew Biggs as well as David Walker, both people that you probably know. As part of the solutions that they talked about, taxes being one of those, increasing taxes, more so on David Walker's side. Andrew talked about putting a cap on Social Security, saying, hey, it's really too generous of a program. Maybe at this point, it wasn't intended to make people get to where they got maybe $80,000 or $90,000 a year, which he talked about in his situation he would be in between he and his spouse. Anything that you see on your side that you say, from my research and study, these could be some good changes that could happen to really stabilize the program or changes maybe we could get through?
Well, one of the powers of Social Security, as you know, they always called it the third rail of politics, touch it and you die. Well, there's a new philosophy that basically the third rail should be doing nothing, because then you're forcing people into a future benefit cut. That's not a good idea either. But one of the reasons it is so powerful politically is the fact that almost all Americans pay into the system and get benefits out of the system. They have skin in the game. They care about it. And when I consult with financial advisors and their clients, I'll tell you whether it's going to be the sole source of your retirement income, which it never was intended to be, but unfortunately is for some people, or whether it's a small portion. People feel like they paid into the system and they care about it. I think the danger in some of the proposals, the idea is, okay, let's raise taxes on these rich workers, but let's change the benefit formula so they don't get benefits at the other end. I think that would destroy the popularity and the support of the Social Security system. And if you get to the point that it becomes strictly means tested, only people who need that retirement income would get it, it essentially becomes welfare, and then it loses its political clout. And it could also be subject to the whims of Congress and whatever the budget cutting philosophy is at the time. The way it's structured now, it is sacrosanct. The money coming in for those FICA taxes are used to pay those benefits. I think there can be tweaks along the way that still maintains the integrity of the program. I think you may see the full retirement age gradually increase from 67, which applies to people born in 1960 or later, to maybe 70. But I'm talking for today's two-year-olds. They're going to live to 120. They'll get used to it. Give them several decades to adjust to the fact, and people can make allowances for it. I don't think Social Security is too generous. I think one, the most critical part is, much like an annuity, it lasts the rest of your life, no matter how long you live. But from an investment standpoint, it's the cheapest annuity you'll ever be able to buy. If you were to buy a commercial annuity that replaced the equivalent of your Social Security benefit, it would probably cost you 40% more than you have paid into your FICA taxes. It's also cost of living adjusted. And I know some people argue that those COLAs are too generous, that they're tied to the CPI, which doesn't reflect the budget of the typical elderly retiree. There's very few Social Security beneficiaries that will tell you they're getting too much money, because yes, their expenses go up, and they tend to have, say, more medical expenses than the average urban worker that might be spending more for housing. So there are possibilities out there of tweaking the benefits, tweaking the taxes. I think one thing you'll see is up to 85% of benefits are subject to ordinary income taxes at this point, but the thresholds for taxing those benefits are really low. They were set in 1983. And never were indexed for inflation. I think you will eventually see 100% of benefits being taxable, but I think they'll also increase the thresholds to maybe 50,000 for singles and 100,000 for married couples. That doesn't bring in a lot of money, because frankly, the percentage of beneficiaries more than retain paying taxes and their benefits than when they were first instituted back in 1983, but it doesn't bring in a huge amount of money percentage-wise. So yeah, a lot of good ideas are out there. It's just a matter of, can we get people to the table to talk about it? In the current congressional environment, I don't see that happens. There has to be some sort of grand compromise, whether it's done by a bipartisan commission like done in the past, and basically force Congress to vote.
Seems like a good consensus of everyone at this point. The same thing, saying it's just hard to get people together. We know it's a problem. We know we need to fix it. I think the last statistic I saw were $45 billion coming in from the taxes that are being paid on your Social Security benefits. But again, when you look at how big the program is to you and I individually, $45 billion seems like a large number. When you look at how big Social Security is, really to some level, a drop in the bucket there. Mary Beth, one of the things that you'd brought up there is the claiming of benefits, and we talk about it all the time through our education. What are your thoughts as far as when we should claim those benefits? Again, talking about fear of running out over missing out. What are some things you can tell us there?
Well, certainly for those people who are healthy enough and wealthy enough to delay, waiting up until age 70 can make an enormous difference in your future retirement income. For every year you postpone claiming your benefits beyond your full retirement age up until age 70, you're getting an extra 8% per year. So if your full retirement age is 67 and you wait 3 years until 70 to claim benefits, you're getting an extra 24% for the rest of your life. More dramatic way of illustrating that is the difference between claiming as soon as possible at age 62 versus as late as possible at age 70 would mean a 76% increase in your Social Security income for the rest of your life. As a certified financial planner, there is no investment I can recommend to you that is going to give you a 76% increase in income, basically by investing 8 years of your life. But waiting until 70 is not right for everybody. Some people have health issues. If you don't live till average life expectancy, you would have been better off collecting smaller benefits early than delaying for a bigger benefit. Also, if you need the money, that's what it's there for. If you lost your job during the pandemic or you retired early because you were concerned about your health, maybe you need the money. Go ahead and take it. And if you do, there are some ways to reverse those decisions later. I generally say married couples should look at their claiming strategy as a household decision. And I recommend that the spouse with the bigger benefit, who traditionally tends to be the husband, who tends to be a few years older, who is actuarially likely to die first, he's the one who should wait till 70, creating the biggest retirement benefit possible while both spouses are alive, and potentially creating the largest survivor benefit for his surviving wife. Now, having said that, if she has earned a Social Security benefit on her own earnings record and she's not working at the time, she may want to claim her reduced Social Security retirement benefit early to bring some cash into the household and take away the bit of the sting of her husband waiting till 70. And the great secret is, even though her retirement benefits are reduced for the rest of her life because she claimed them early, it will have no impact on her survivor benefit if she is at least full retirement age when she claims them. Now, people who are not entitled to their own retirement benefit because they didn't work long enough, maybe they stayed home raising kids or taking care of elderly family members, they're also entitled to a spousal benefit, but they can't get one until their husband or their wife claim Social Security to trigger that spousal benefit. So in that case, it may not make sense for the one spouse to wait till 70 because it means the other spouse has to wait till the worker turns 70 to get the spousal benefit. In that case, I'd say, let's look at the other source of retirement income of what can we do, because we know if the husband doesn't wait till 70, the Social Security survivor benefit is going to be smaller. So we have to make other arrangements. Is there a survivorship from a pension? Is a designated beneficiary from an IRA? Is there life insurance? Is there annuity with the survivor benefit? You have to look at the whole picture. But generally for single people, I'd say wait until your full retirement age, particularly if you're working, so those earnings restrictions go away. Tougher call for the single person whether they should delay or not, because if they delay and died before claiming or died shortly after claiming, there is no one to receive a survivor benefit.
What you really find out is that it's situational Social Security. It's a term that was coined by some friends of mine, but you really realize that this is something that is different for everyone. I know in my situation, I've got two disabled children. So my claiming strategy is completely different than most other people's out there because I don't know any other person that's got two disabled children. So as you look at that structure, one of the other questions I get asked, though, oftentimes, Mary Beth, is, what if I can invest that money? Doesn't it make sense to claim at 62 if I can invest the money and let it grow? And then doesn't that work out better? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you have to compare it to a risk-free investment, which is essentially your bank account or a CD. Over the past decade, we were in virtually a zero interest rate environment, and you could not beat the 8% a year that Social Security would give you for waiting compared to putting it in your bank account and earning zero. Sure, you could put it in the stock market and you might make 30%, but you might lose 30%. This is your lifetime income. Do you really want to gamble with it? Now, the fact is interest rates are increasing, and now you could get a CD 4%, maybe 5%. That might be a safe alternative. I think if interest rates continued to rise and get closer to that 8% a year, people may feel more comfortable claiming at full retirement age and basically banking the difference, knowing that it was there no matter what would happen. But at this point, 8% is still pretty attractive. And if you, as I said, are healthy enough because you're going to be around a long time and wealthy enough that you have some other source of income, whether it's from your investments or job, to wait till 70, it's a great bet for people who can afford to do it.
And one of the other things when we look at, even from an interest standpoint, is how long is that going to last? If we go back over a 30-year retirement, maybe, and it's like, okay, we're at 4% now, maybe we get to 5, but then it drops off the table in 5 or 10 years, it's going to have an effect. And I'm with you, and I'm not one that likes to gamble with my retirement, so I'm not a big fan of people taking their money and investing it, but tell people to do what they please. And as you look at it too, you just got to understand the majority of people I work with, even though they're telling me that's what they're going to do, that's not what they do. The money gets into their bank account, all of a sudden there's extra cash. Hey, let's go ahead and buy something that we hadn't had the money for in the past or whatever the case may be.
You know, another thing that many people do not realize, a strategy to address that concern, for any time you claim Social Security benefits after your full retirement age, you have the right to request a retroactive lump sum payment of up to 6 months of retroactive benefits. And those retroactive benefits can't start before your full retirement age. For example, if your full retirement age is 67 and you claim at 68, you have two choices. You can either pay it as if you claimed at 68, which would be your full retirement age plus 1 year delayed retirement credit. So that's plus 8%. Or you could claim at 67 and 6 months, which would be your full retirement age plus 4%, a half a year of delayed retirement credits, and then request 6 months of retroactive benefits in a lump sum. If you're trying to pay off your mortgage or you have some other bills or just need that cushion, that could be a good alternative for you. And you could stretch to the point that the delayed retirement credits ends at 70. And I 99% of the time tell people, certainly, collect at 70. But you could argue the point that if I collected at 70 and a half, I'm still getting my maximum Social Security monthly benefit, and I could also request a lump sum retroactive benefit of 6 months. But do be aware, if you take that lump sum, it's going to boost your income for the year, which is likely going to boost your income taxes. And depending on your overall income, it could also increase your future Medicare premiums, which are tied to your retirement income.
So much has got to be taken into consideration as we look at this topic. And that's why we bring experts like you onto the show. That's why we've talked about it now for a number of weeks. Mary Beth, our time is gone. I can't believe how quick time goes when we talk on topics that I enjoy talking about like this, and with great people like you that have spent your career learning the nuances, all the details that are involved in the program. I know you've got the book. We mentioned that. If you would let our listeners know how they can get a copy as well as get access to the information you provide in regards to Social Security and retirement in general.
Thanks for that opportunity, Dave. Yes, my book is called Maximizing Social Security Benefits, and you could get it at MaximizingSocialSecurityBenefits.com. I also recently created my own website, MaryBethFranklin.com, where you can get a lot of free information about some of these claiming strategies we talked about. You can also buy my book there. And if you're a financial professional or someone that organizes consumer education groups. There's information of how you can hire me to speak either in person or in a webinar to help educate your audience about how to maximize your Social Security benefits.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. Listeners, if you would like to learn more about Mary Beth Franklin's book, Maximizing Social Security Benefits, go to her website, MaximizingSocialSecurityBenefits.com. If you would like to learn more about how you can get safely through retirement, go to RetirementRiskAdvisors.com and get access to the tools we have. This has been our show. I look forward to seeing each of you again next week, where we'll be back talking about another risk that will be facing you in your retirement.
And that's today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to wherever you get your podcast.
The Retirement Risk Show is a production of the Retirement Risk Advisors. Our show was produced by C.R. Talin and Autumn Koenig. If you're a CPA looking for more retirement education, visit RetirementRiskAdvisors.com.